Iambic Audiobooks presents With or Without You by Lauren Sanders, read by Leanne Howlett. Part 1. July 2, 1987, the morning after. Because I'm wearing all my clothes, and because the bay is choppy, I pretend I'm trapped in a giant washing machine. Sun pecks the back of my neck, warming me through the glass. My legs bob up and down. It's a light spin cycle, the setting for silk blouses, lacy underwear, or, if you're my mother, an endless string of sheer pantyhose, the kind I don't mind on other girls, but hate wearing myself. Gentlemen prefer them, too. Ask my father. He and his pal Gustav shoot the most popular hosiery commercials in town. You were wearing black hose when I left you. Maybe it was a different brand, but the sparkle and the crisscrossed fibers gave your shins the look of one of their spots. Edgy but sophisticated. And no blood on them, attached to your two black boots pointing skyward, forecasting the journey, if you believe in that kind of crap. I swim out a few feet where the waves are calmer, turn over on my back, and float. In camp they called this the dead man's float, but I've never felt more alive. Too alive for a murderer. Though I'm not any normal murderer, and you're no ordinary victim. Just a few days ago I thought about picking you up outside the theater and taking you to a fancy restaurant, maybe bringing you to my summer house once my family cleared out. You were so tired and needed a break. Even with all the makeup caked into your cheeks, I could tell. Particularly that day I found you sitting in the stairwell, your legs triangled and head resting between them. You were pulling the blonde hairs from your scalp one at a time. It must have been tough keeping up with your world scenes and being in a play at the same time. But you told Soap Opera Weekly it was a nice break from Los Angeles. Not that you didn't like L.A. You had an apartment somewhere in Hollywood, a little red car and a big sloppy dog, a personal fitness trainer. You said it was the only city where you ever felt comfortable. I'd considered applying to art school out there before my parents decided Syracuse was the place for me. I think I told you in one of my letters how my father knew some guy at the school there. Jack promised he'd help fund the Media Literacy Center if they'd overlook my lame SAT scores and enter me in the class of 91. Nancy helped me complete the application, constructing the essay in a way that made me sound conventional. Just a slap-happy girl from the suburbs, my teenage years spent cheering football players from the bleachers and playing in the band. When we finished the draft, I asked, "Who's this?" "Exactly who they're looking for," she said, and I knew she'd done her research. She always did. It was how she made a fortune selling houses to other people just like herself. She said there was no way I would ruin the opportunity at Syracuse the way I'd sabotage their attempts to send me to dance class, getting expelled for, quote, negligent uncoordination. And all of those camps. When I was booted from the last one for hitchhiking, Nancy called me an ingrate. A couple years later, she was even more pissed I refused the nose job that was supposed to be my birthday present. You had a perfect nose. Small and button-like. If your nostrils were any bigger, they would have been piggish, a distraction from those clear blue eyes. So reflective I could see myself in them, a shadow, the outline of my knuckles on the cool metal. Eyes corkscrewed and pleading. Why? I skim my right hand along the gray-blue water. When it dips below the surface, it grows purplish-white and humongous. No longer my hand at all. I can't stand it, so I go down, fighting the weight of my parachute pants. They seem to have inflated. I touch my sneakers to the bottom and it feels turbulent. This is where the delicates give way to chain gang fabrics, the denim and cotton and flannel. Underwater, my ears rumble like a distant subway car, and I'm freaking. Can you hear the palpitations in my chest? Stay down, I tell myself. It's only fair. Beams of light split the oily water. It's not the celestial strobe near-death freaks talk about, but more like the headlights from Jack's BMW. Bright white circles illuminating this undersea world. Moss, gnarled seaweed, silt. I try digging my feet into the bottom, but it's too rocky. What feels like slippery crepe paper wraps around my neck and I flinch, kicking off my sneakers. My lungs fill with water and I force myself up. Hacking but alive. Forget what anyone says. It's hard to drown when you know how to swim. I am for one moment happy. My breathing turns to laughter, and I dolphin flip forward, wondering what I'll do today. A bike ride, sit by the pool. It's summer. Then I spot the motorboat coming toward me and remember where I am, what I've done. I lean my head back into the water. Chicken shit. The boat rocks to the side of me. Aboard are two men in khaki pants, green shirts, and sunglasses, one by the steering wheel, the other leaning his thick leg on a bench and chewing a toothpick. Their patches say Shelter Island Police Department. "This is a no-swimming zone," says the cop behind the wheel. "I'm not swimming."
"Sure looks like it."
"Can't you see I'm trying to kill myself?" I regret that the moment I say it, mostly because they laugh at me. Ridiculous creature, out here in the bay on a blinding summer day, wearing all my clothes, telling them I want to kill myself when I don't. I was never good at suicide. Not for any throbbing love of life, but a total lack of nerve. I just couldn't do it. And like most things in life, you don't get much points for your failures. But now I am a celebrity murderer. A murderer soon to be a celebrity. I deserve a little respect from a couple of bumblefuck cops. The talky one backs away from the steering wheel and throws out a rope ladder. History warns, climb aboard or they'll shoot. And they should, if justice is anything like the Bible says. An eye for an eye, tit for tat. But because, like my father, I'm an atheist, I grab the ladder and with wrinkled fingers hoist myself aboard. Sun smacks the left side of my body. My skin is always quick to burn. A splotched face'll ruin the perp walk. I'll look pathetic on the news. "Got any sunscreen?" I ask. The silent cop hands me a tube of lotion. Taking it from him, I notice a piece of egg or muffin trapped in the thick strands of his mustache. The hairs remind me of a straw broom. I imagine them pricking the lips of a girl, and know even with a mouth so creepy he can get it whenever he wants. Bastard. I squeeze a few drops of coconut lotion into my palms and rub them together before bringing my hands to my face. The lotion, too greasy under normal circumstances, loosens the saltwater mask on my cheeks. Then I do my arms. When I'm finished, I hold out my fists. "You can cuff me now." Silent cop smiles, the dirty straws above his lips expanding as he surveys my waterlogged Syracuse sweatshirt and parachute pants. Talking cop says, "I think we better get you home. You on island for the summer?"
"No."
"Then where do you live?"
I try to remember the address of my summer house, but draw a blank. They're questioning me like I'm any other suicide teen. I probably seem young. When my hair's wet, you can't see the shock of white on the left side. Makes people think I'm older than I am. I've got ancient hair and two webbed toes on each foot. Talking cop is trying to be nice, smiling as he says they can't take me home if they don't know where I live. "I'm telling you, arrest me," I shout at him. "Read me my rights. I have the right to remain silent, the right to an attorney. Come on."
"You watch too much TV."
"You really don't get it."
"No, you don't get it," silent cop says. It's the first time he speaks, and I don't like it. "We got better things to do than play idiot games all morning, so tell us where you live or we'll dump you back in the bay."
"Go ahead," I say, sick of their small-time attitude. They have no idea who they're dealing with. "I killed someone big last night," I say, and they both burst out laughing. "Hey, jerk, if you don't believe me, call New York," Ask them about Brooke Harrison. I'm about to make you very famous." Saying the words, I am for a few seconds tough, like the baddest motherfucker in the world. Bad like Al Capone, Michael Jackson. Badder than old King Kong, meaner than a junkyard dog. Then I see your face and know you're watching. The cops look back and forth between each other and me. They must have seen the news and are trying to decide if I'm actually... My temples pound. I said I killed somebody, and told them your name. Anything I say can and will be held against me. I said I killed somebody. I want to drop to my knees and beg their forgiveness, beg for a lawyer, but something tells me stay tough. I lean back on my hands and stare off into the blues of summer. A seagull calls overhead. The ocean glimmers in the distance like a flattened disco ball. Up close you can see the hypodermic needles, beer cans, and plastic bags floating nowhere. Suddenly I know what to do. I jump overboard. The water is colder, more intimidating. Breathing in, I swallow all the water I can this time. Something hard and fleshy pulls across my stomach, and I feel my body being lifted up and thrown over the boat. Shoving me to the floor, the silent cop puts a black boot on my stomach. We are both dripping wet and hyperventilating. "Give me the cuffs," he says. "Don't got 'em," the other says. "What?" "Last night at the school." "So?" "I think we left them in the car." "Fucking idiot, get the wheel," the silent cop screams, pressing his foot down against my stomach. I'm going to puke. He lifts a soiled towel from the floor, pulls me up, and turns me around. Now he's got his foot on my back and he's squeezing the towel around my wrists behind me. My face splashes against the fiberglass, the sun caressing the right side of my face this time. I hear the motor crank, feel the waves beneath my stomach. Then the voice rings faintly in my ear. "Listen up, sweetheart. Here comes Mr. Miranda."